deep dive into principle two. Right now, we're going to talk about principle two, which is generate motivation. This is the next step after beginning to practice principle one, which is care. Our tool in principle one is playing the part. We've already learned about that. We know so much about that at this point. PART is an acronym for prompt, ask and accept, respond, and talk. And it is the framework that gives us the structure and the opportunity to pause long enough when we have a choice to make so that we can make the most caring choice that we are capable of in the moment. We use this tool, we apply this four-step process to decisions around food, obviously, around exercise and activity, obviously. We also, as we deepen our practice of the principles, apply it to, you know, asking for a raise, and we apply it to deciding what art class we're going to sign up for. We apply it to how we deal with the garage or the bedroom or the living room or the floor of the car. We apply it to our relationships with our children and our siblings and our coworkers and our neighbors. It reaches out and helps us to act with care in every facet of our lives. Principle two is specifically aimed to give some guidance and some structure for you if you struggle to feel motivated, if you struggle to feel ready, if you struggle to take the first step or to continue to take steps after that first step has been taken. The tool in Principle 2 is Now Do Everything. It's a memory tool. It is not an order. It is not a requirement. It is a tool. Now do everything. And each one of the three pieces of the tool represents a critical inroad to generating motivation where there might not be any, where you may be feeling at absolute zero. One or all, some combination of these three tools can help pull you out of that if you are willing to try, if you are willing to practice. And as I've been thinking about Principle 2 last week and this week, I've been thinking about what the three tools have in common, what the three sort of tips have in common. And what they have in common, now and do and everything, now being focusing on goals that can be met in the day that you are in, right? Do is taking action despite feeling whether or not you feel motivated to do so. And everything invites you to pull up and away and take more of a bird's eye view of your own care, your own life, and your power in it so that you can exercise care in every area. Everywhere. Exercise care everywhere. So the thing that I keep returning to as I've been thinking about Principle 2 is that each one of these three tools can only work if we are committed to developing a tolerance for discomfort, for awkwardness, for imperfection. And the perfectionist streak is strong in many of us. And one of the common personality traits of perfectionists often is that they would rather do nothing than do something poorly. They would rather do nothing than do a B-minus job. It's that like all or nothing mentality, all or nothing married to perfectionism that keeps us paralyzed for decades. And so I want to talk about developing a tolerance for imperfection and how that can help you to practice each one of the three motivation generating tools in Principle 2. So the first one we're going to start with is the now. Which is very simply, do what you can do today and don't worry about the goals that are far off in the distance. Easier said than done, I realize. You know, if you come into the principles because you want to have a healthier relationship to food, wonderful, fabulous. you're where you're supposed to be. But more often than not, those of us who want to have a healthier relationship to food can't take our focus off of the end goal, the profound weight loss, the 20-pound weight loss, the 50-pound weight loss, the 250-pound weight loss, which cannot happen today, no matter what we do, no matter what we eat, no matter how many miles we run. That goal cannot be met today. But still, we want to eat well. We want to be active. We want to create an atmosphere where the body can find its most comfortable place, right? Perhaps its most comfortable weight. And we know that we need to do that day after day after day after day in order to reach that long-term goal. But what we're not conscious of is how demoralizing it is to focus on that long-term goal and always be so painfully aware of how long a way there is between you and where you want to be. So we can't afford demoralization, right? We don't have time for self-pity or anxiety or, you know, fear that it's too far off. And because then we start, the Rolodex starts to flip in our minds of all of the obstacles that are going to come up between now and then, and how difficult it's going to be to continue to keep this commitment that I've made around food, especially since the holidays are coming, or especially since the summer is coming, or there's always a million reasons that the beast is right there to throw at us why we're not going to be able to get to that distant goal, why we're not going to be able to reach it. Which often, frequently, makes us look down at ourselves in the present moment, at the nourishing meal in front of us, and say, you know what, screw it. It's not going to work anyway, so don't even, whatever, why bother? Right? That is why instrumental goals, where the step that you are taking today and the long off in the future distant goal are barely relatable, right? Because nothing that you eat today can get you to that weight loss goal. Instrumental goals lead to, fuel, all but guarantee self-sabotage, all but guarantee that the goal will not be met. So the NOW tool in Principle 2 says, instead, we must work on developing internal goals. We must work on developing direct associations between the caring act that we're choosing in this moment and the deep pleasure that will result immediately after. I am eating this nourishing food so that I can feel peaceful and comfortable in my body and empowered on the other side, right? Immediate, directly related, A, then B, and there's the marriage. The goal is met. You feel accomplished. You feel sane because you set yourself up to do something and you did it. And then you get to enjoy the fruits of that choice, which is deep pleasure, which is what drives our whole practice. So of course, you know, things are going to happen that are going to make it difficult to stay in the now. Things are going to happen mainly because we've been told since birth that we're supposed to be these skinny, mini, little whatevers. And so it's really difficult to tease apart the food that we're eating in this moment and what impact it will have on that long-term weight loss goal. I don't expect you to suddenly, you'd have to get a lobotomy to suddenly stop thinking about that long-term weight loss goal. It's not a reasonable thing for anyone to ask you to do. But here is my suggestion. If you're working this tool, if you're using this practice, if you're focusing on the NOW tool in Principle 2, then might I suggest that every time you realize that you're thinking about that far-off distant goal, you use that as a prompt and immediately bring it back into the moment. Every time you find yourself thinking about how far you have to go to get where you want to be, every time you go to an insensitive doctor's office and the nurse who weighs you gives you the side eye, right? Use that as a prompt. Every time anything happens that makes you conscious of your weight in a way that makes you feel shame or anger or fear or anxiety, I want you to use that as a prompt so that you can play the part in that moment and treat yourself with as much care as you are capable of in that moment, so that you end up turning that sabotage fueling focus into energy to care for yourself in the moment that you are in reality. This is, can you imagine what kind of shape you'd be in if every time you thought about your weight, it was like Pavlov's bell, and you immediately took some caring action, like immediately took the most caring action that you were capable of in that moment. If every time you looked in the mirror and didn't like how you looked, or every time you pulled on a pair of jeans and couldn't quite get them, you know, to button up, or every time you walked up a flight of stairs and felt winded, if every time something about your weight, some experience in the world made you feel badly, you used that as your prompt to care for and love, to take action in the moment that would bring you peace and accomplishment and comfort and a sense of empowerment, you'd be the queen of the world, right? But of course, me saying that, if every single time you ever thought about your weight, you did something good, see, that's the perfectionist in me, right? Using those giant blanket statements, like, what if you had a perfect system, and that's not what we're after. We're after getting comfortable with an imperfect system. Because we need to be able to embrace imperfection, because there's no way that we're ever going to do this perfectly. I'm never going to do it perfectly. You're never going to do it perfectly. It's not possible. Mainly because every time we make the most caring choice possible, what the most caring choice possible is shifts and changes and moves, right? Every step we take toward wholeness and wellness and health and feeling stable and sane, what we need to continue to move forward on that path shifts and changes. Our priorities change. Our expectations change. Our tolerance for joy goes up, you know? So, imperfection. One more thing about the now. There's always going to be sort of finite obstacles. I said anything that makes you think about your weight. One major offender is the scale. We talk about that plenty, I think, in Principle 3, which will be the next thing that you avail yourself of. Getting on the scale can be a major obstacle to staying in the now, because you're hyper-conscious of how much further you have to go in order to get to your goal. Same goes for wearing clothes that don't fit you properly, right? If the clothes are too tight, then every time you put them on, you're going to have one of those shame-fueled, beast-based reactions. You're going to lash in, you're going to be angry, you're going to feel anxious, you're going to feel sad, or whatever it is that makes you feel. And that's going to make caring for yourself more difficult. So getting rid of the scale and limiting your wardrobe to clothes that are comfortable, that you feel good in. Whether, you know, forget about the clothes that you feel like you should fit into, or the pants that you spent $120 on. You know, forget about all of that. The only thing, you had one job, jeans, one job, and that was to, you know, cover my legs and my butt and do it comfortably. That is what you focus on when it comes to clothes, being comfortable and feeling good in what you wear. Those are two pretty simple, pretty acute examples of obstacles that will come in your way when you're trying to stay in the now, trying to stick with those internal goals. So, of course, the next in our three-part tool for generating motivation is do. And do, it simply encourages us to take action despite feeling motivated or not to take that action. because we've determined based on our own data that it is a caring action, that it's appropriate for us, and that the result is going to be deep pleasure. So when we are struggling, perhaps we've finished principle one and haven't quite begun to practice principle two, you might notice that you're in sort of a liminal space between heaven and hell where you feel like you're just endlessly waiting for something magical to happen, for a unicorn to come along and sprinkle fairy dust on your head, for a jug to fall off of a high shelf and hit you in the noggin in just such a way that you wake up and suddenly you feel like running marathons and eating only bok choy and kale. I don't know. These things are very unlikely to happen. Very unlikely to happen. It is by taking action. It is by making caring choices and then experiencing the pleasure that results from those choices that we begin to develop motivation from zero. In order to do that, we have to simply act. Even though every force inside of us might be fighting against it, even though the beast is there to remind you of all of the walks you haven't gone on before that you said that you were going to go on, or all of the healthy meals that you said you were going to eat but you didn't, like, there's always going to be information available from inside your brain telling you why you should not take action in this moment. Practicing the do part of now do everything invites you to walk out the door anyway, to strap on the sneakers and go, to have your activity commitments, your food-based commitments, if that makes sense, written out in your calendar when they are going to happen and exactly what you want to have happen. So say it's a 20-minute walk at lunch, right? And it happens between 12 and 12:20. When that is in the calendar, that becomes your priority when 12 rolls around and you strap on your sneakers and you go and you go. And because we're cultivating a tolerance for imperfection in this scenario, you go, it doesn't matter if you go so fast. It doesn't really matter if you break a sweat. It doesn't really, you know, don't imagine that you're going to walk out the door and you're going to be speed walking, trucking for 20 minutes, heart racing, you know, sweat pouring, just like feeling like Linda Ronstadt's playing in your earbuds. And I'm not even sure I could name a Linda Ronstadt song right now, which is unfortunate, but it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to happen. Because you go out the door for that first walk, and then you never have to do that first walk again. And it doesn't even matter if you only make it 18 minutes or even 15 minutes because you did it. You know what it feels like to tie on your sneakers and walk out the door at that hour. Tomorrow will be easier. Tomorrow you'll be smarter. Tomorrow you'll know not to walk down by the construction because you'll get yowled at by those 8 men in the hard hats who don't know how to talk to women. You know, you will get better at it every single day and it will feel more natural and more easy. But first, you have to be okay with it being awkward. And it's okay for it to be awkward. Do you remember the first time you had sex? I do. Oh, God. You know, all potentially good things start out as an awkward mess. And the only question is, is it important enough to you to stick with it so that you can learn how to make it happen in a way that you're really happy with? I mentioned scheduling activity, and I think that this is of critical importance. I think that scheduling activity and putting it in your calendar, scheduling any caring choice that diverts from your norm and putting it in your calendar, because I've realized that time is pretty theoretical unless you can see it. And I'm not talking about a watch or a clock on a wall. I mean, I think everybody, especially us, should have just a giant calendar somewhere so that we can see the landscape of a month and so that we can begin to wrap our heads around when we're going to do the things that are our priorities. Because without that visual aid, hours just burn and days just go and weeks and months. You know, I get emails from women frequently who emailed me in 2011 to train with me, you know, or 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, who emailed me to ask me if I would train them. And I responded with my welcome packet and sure, let's do this, whatever. And then they never responded. They never got back to me. And without fail, when they reach out years later, they say, I can't believe this much time has passed. It is absurd to me. You know, they'll be responding to the same email thread from 7 years prior. I can't believe I've allowed this much time to pass without following up on this email. This is something that's still really important to me. And I feel even worse than I did. And I'm embarrassed, but I'm reaching out to you anyway. You know, time does just go. And unless we can map it out in a finite and easy to read way and see when the things that are important to us, when their time is in our life, it's very unlikely that it's going to happen. So I encourage you to set a time, set a date, set a goal, right? This is going to be a daily goal. We'll talk about that in Principle 3. It's going to be a daily goal. Set it. And then when the time comes, when the bell tolls, get out the door and do it as imperfectly as it happens, because you're doing it. And that you're doing it makes it perfect. The details I am less concerned about, much less concerned about. Now, obstacles to taking action, obstacles to using the do tool in Now Do Everything. Here's the thing. If you're of a mind to be talked out of following through on your commitment, everything is an obstacle. Everything. If you have already secretly, subtly decided that it's probably not going to happen, then chipping a mug while you're washing it or seeing a weird meme on the internet or stubbing your toe, or remembering that horrible thing that you said to your best friend when you were 12 at her birthday party that you still feel embarrassed about, or, I mean, anything can become the reason why the goal was not met, why the commitment was not followed through on, why you did not leave and go and take that walk. Anything and everything can feel like and become an obstacle. On the flip side of that, if you have committed to practice the principles to the best of your ability, honestly and genuinely, then almost nothing is an obstacle. Obviously, there are some very notable, exceptions to this. If you're suddenly bleeding from the eye, or if your child is, you know, broken, or if there is a fire, like, obviously, not trying to be irrational, but barring disasters like that, if you are like, you know what, I'm going to do this. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I've committed to do because it's important to me. And I want more pleasure in my life. And I'm sick of feeling like shit. And I'm sick of feeling tired. And I'm sick of feeling unmoored. And I'm sick of feeling insane. And I'm sick of feeling out of control. And I recognize that this is the path to me feeling better. So I'm going to do it. So then it doesn't matter if your boss shows up 3 minutes before you're supposed to go with a, you know, crisis, because you lay out a healthy boundary and say, I have a commitment and I will be back and I will help you with this in a half an hour. Or, you know, it doesn't matter if your phone starts blowing up or your girlfriend's like, I don't feel good about myself and I need you to tone me down off the ledge. Like, It's okay if you talk to her in a half an hour, right? Nothing is going to stand in your way if you have decided to practice this to the best of your ability. And it really depends on how you choose to orient yourself to this practice. So how you choose to orient yourself to the possibility of living in deep pleasure for the rest of your life. It is available to you. You are entirely capable of cultivating it. How will you choose to stand in relation to that? Will you stand in a position of power and open-mindedness, taking the suggestions that are given that make sense to you and leaving the rest? Or will you let the beast drive the bus and take the suggestions in the practice as an opportunity to rebel and show that you don't really care how good the suggestions are because you happen to be the one who is too broken to follow these suggestions? I know that if I was on the other side of this, that would definitely be a thought in my mind. And before my maladaptive reactions to shame brought me to my bottom, I probably would have said, you know what, this is all real lovely and it sounds dead on, but I'm just not going to, doing what is strongly suggested of me to do is just not my style, so I'm out. You know, once I woke up every day as though I was in prison and was feeling completely disconnected from not just myself, but everyone that I loved, because I didn't feel like a real person anymore, because I had gone so far, I had allowed myself to neglect so much and abuse myself so hard that I just didn't feel any sense of true connection to anything anymore. That would have been the moment when I'd have been like, I'll do anything, just tell me what to do. Moving on. Everything. Everything is the third and final tool in Principle 2. Everything is the tool of the whole Pleasure Principles course. Everything is the one that I get the most pushback on, because this is a course for women. Women are known to be huge overachievers and so incredibly complicated and capable and able to multitask. And so the underachievers around them, let them handle everything. Let us handle everything. Let you handle everything. All of the scheduling, all of the cleaning, all of the administrative details, right? You know what's going on and what needs to be done in every single inch of your home and your work, and probably nobody else does, but you're managing everything. And because those responsibilities fall to you alone often, you feel quite justifiably overwhelmed. Everything is not that. Instead, what this tool is speaking to is how all of the choices that you make in every facet of your life inform how you feel about making all of the other choices that are available to you. My favorite illustration of this is sleep and how critical it is to being able to make loving, healthy, nourishing choices around every other aspect of your life. If you are sleep deprived, you are miserable from right out of the gate, and you're just trying to survive. If you're adequately rested and you wake up to a first minute where you feel okay and good, you know, that doesn't have to be glitter and marching bands, and you don't have to like dance to the bathroom. But when you wake up and you just don't feel tired anymore, or you wake up and you just don't feel panicked, you wake up and you just don't feel like, oh, why again? Why now? Why already? if you just feel neutral, that's an incredible gift. That's a fabulous place to start because you have choices when you start from neutral. You get to decide where you're going to put your energy, and maybe you'll go a little bit out of your way to cook a meal and bring it to work so you don't have to be at the mercy of whatever is at the cafe or drive to the drive-through or whatever it is. You are beginning the day from a powerful, capable place. So that one choice to go to bed when your body wanted to go to bed and sleep through the night informs every other choice you make the following day. Not all choices have as profound and far-reaching an impact, but they all have an impact. If you're doing what you need to do around doctor's appointments, not avoiding them, right? Going to them, asking for help and suggestions, taking the suggestions that you are given, right? Being compliant in that way is going to make you feel accomplished and make you feel empowered and give you a greater sense of peace. And those elements alive in your brain are going to have impact on things that are entirely unrelated to your medical life, like your creative output, or perhaps the conversations that you have with your friends, or the ways in which you find yourself relating to food that is available, because you're going out of your way in this one way that is sort of inconvenient and kind of awkward, and it makes it like a little less inconvenient feeling, a little less awkward feeling to go out of your way to do good things around food. Every single choice that you make informs every other choice that comes your way. Every caring choice that you make makes caring choices easier moving forward. It is all totally connected. Your financial health is related to your sexual health. Your sexual health is related to your intellectual life. Your intellectual life informs your spiritual experience. All of it is related. You are one person. You are not some wacky, compartmentalized, robotic automaton. You are just the one, just here, and you're living just the one life. It makes sense that everything that you do would reverberate outward into everything else that you're doing. So the challenge is that we come into a practice like this where we've struggled with food or weight for a long time, and we think that the problem is food and the solution will be a diet. We think that the problem is our weight and the solution will be to weigh less. We have this tunnel vision about what it is that we think we need to address, and we don't hardly ever give any time to thinking about all of the other factors that are influencing our relationship to food. I think of it as a river. I think I say this in the course. How you are living your life is a river, and it is going, it is flowing smoothly. Perhaps there's some rocks, I don't know, in one direction. Let's say that it is going in the not good direction. In the direction of self-sabotage and neglect and abuse and discomfort and feeling out of control. And there's a tremendous amount of momentum. There's a lot of weight behind that water. And it's moving in unison, all of it together as one body, even though it's a million, billion, trillion individual droplets of water, right? It's all moving together and has been for quite some time. Changing only the food piece, changing only how you eat or what you eat or when, is like trying to reverse the direction of one small section of water in a river that is traveling the other way. Because if you're not addressing anything else, if you're not changing and acting with care around anything but food, all of the other factors, all of the other pieces are still going in that direction. And this one little section that is what you're eating and how and when is fighting a power that is much stronger than it. The way that this happens for life, for women like you and like me, is that we begin to A, slow the river's pace, so that we have a chance to reverse the direction, so that we have a chance to bring it all and turn it around. And it really does happen all together. And efforts to change just one thing are very likely to fail because of that momentum in the other direction. People who embrace the everything tool in Principle 2 have a much, much, much easier time of making significant sustainable change. They come into the principles open. They come into the principles curious to see how their lack of care in different areas of their lives is impacting them. And this is down to conversations that you have in the hall with coworkers and how you feel about your spouse or significant other. It is informed by how long you've had projects in your home just lingering over your head, untouched and unfinished. All of these things have an impact. And when people come into the principles and hear about everything and embrace that, yeah, perhaps now is time for me to practice making caring choices whenever there is a choice to be made, those people turn the river around. Those women make amazing progress. Sometimes, often, progress that they had no intention of making ever when they signed up for this course. And their lives completely change because, and I mean this, if you were to imagine right now what your most wonderful life might look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, if you really gave yourself over to the principles and practiced them every day to the best of your ability, you would, I guarantee you, be selling yourself short because you don't even know what you don't know about what you're capable of when you feel good, when you feel peaceful and sane and in control and strong and on it and comfortable and hot. You have no clue what could be waiting on the horizon for you. So the principles invite us to bring care everywhere, to bring our willingness to make the most caring choice we are capable of into every situation. There will be obstacles, right? The weight obsession thing will get in the way. The weight obsession thing will say, what are you caring about brushing your teeth more? And why are you worried about alphabetizing the CDs? Or why are you worried about getting a new job? The problem is food. The problem is the weight, the beast will say. The problem is that you need to lose weight and you haven't lost it yet. That's the problem. Forget about all of this other stuff. Forget about your weird toxic relationship with your brother. Forget about your crazy whatever neighbor who whatever does the thing in the middle of the night that makes you feel unsafe. Like, whatever. Just don't even worry. Don't bring care everywhere. Just eat more kale, is what the beast will say. And in those moments, when you are trying to pull back to see everything in your life and see where you could bring more care into every facet and every area, when the beast responds to that with, what is wrong with you? You need to be dieting and don't waste your time with this other stuff. My suggestion is in that moment that you play the part. I know you're shocked. I know you're shocked, but there it is. There's the beast trying to thwart your effort to generate motivation to make this whole thing easier. there it is, to step on your toes and make sure you continue to feel stuck, because when you feel stuck, the beast is in control. In that moment, you have a choice to believe that voice and say, yeah, you know what, that was kind of silly. I don't know what I was thinking. Or to recognize those ideas as a prompt and play the part. Ask yourself, what am I feeling? Am I feeling overwhelmed because there's so much stuff going on in my life? And to bring care everywhere, like, what would that even look like? You don't have to know what that looks like now. You only have to know what that looks like in the moment that you're in when you play the part and decide on one caring action. You don't need to have all the answers right now or ever. What would that even look like? I don't know. I don't know. Don't worry about that. Just ask, what am I feeling right now? Accept whatever it is that you find. Respond by taking action in that moment in the most caring way that you are capable of. Given the realities of your situation, given what you're supposed to be doing and where you're standing and who's waiting for you or who's not, whether you're hungry or you're tired or your kids are screaming, like, I don't know what the most caring action is, but I know that you do. Take the most caring action that you are capable of, remembering that care does not involve harm ever, right? That's key. And then follow it up by at least thinking about, if not sharing out loud, what deep pleasure resulted from your caring action. What peace did you feel, and how did that manifest after you dealt with your crazy brother or set a healthy boundary in that relationship? What sense of empowerment did that bring you? How much more comfortable in your body did you feel after you went for that walk? Even though the beast had been telling you all day long that it would be such a waste of time because you hadn't walked the previous 3 weeks. Cultivating a tolerance for imperfection, because all of this is just us practicing making the most caring choice we are capable of in the moment. We're not going for an A+ score. We're just practicing. Let yourself practice. Let it be messy if it needs to. Let yourself feel unsure and do it anyway. Give yourself the freedom to be a beginner and be awkward and be unsure and maybe a little nervous. And then when you've done the thing, when you've made the caring choice, when you've taken action, when you've brought it back to the moment that you're in, when you've expanded out to include your self-care practice, to bring your self-care practice into every facet of your life, begin to experiment with sharing in the clutch or with a good friend or in an email to me, coffee@strongcoffee.com, about what deep pleasure resulted from your choice. That makes this practice beautiful and fun and brilliant and sustainable for the rest of your life, which I am very excited I get to witness and participate in and support. Thank you for watching this video. Thank you for showing up for yourself. Launch into Principle 3, and I'll see you again soon. Bye for now.